Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We're back for the home stretch of season preview podcast. Today's podcast, we're going to be covering the Detroit Pistons, and to cover the Detroit Pistons, I welcome back RotoWire's Nick Whalen. Nick, how are you going?
I'm going well. Josh, how's it going for you?
I'm going okay. It's been a busy day, a successful day, and I'm ready to talk some Pistons. But before I do that, Nick, a couple of things we need to cover off. Where can everyone find you on Twitter if they don't remember from 2 or 3 days ago?
Yes, that's right. I believe we did go over this on the Milwaukee Bucks preview earlier in the week. You can find me on Twitter at my last name, Whalen, W-H-A, and then the letter L is a 1, so W-H-A-1-E-N.
So go ahead and follow Nick over there on Twitter and check out the other stuff that he's doing. So he's writing at RotoWire, and you also do some stuff on the True Hoop Network regarding the Milwaukee Bucks. Remind me, Bucksketball?
Yep, Bucksketball.com, like you said, a member of ESPN's True Hoop Network. A lot of NBA writing between both of those places.
Make sure you're checking out Nick's stuff there. Now, before we get into the Pistons, Nick, I just wanted to give a quick mention out to people. If they are interested, I am starting up a Red Rock listener league for a rotisserie league. We've got 12 head-to-head leagues going. I am doing a rotisserie league, so if you are interested in joining that, please send me an email. And I'm also trying to get interest in doing a non-traditional category league, Nick. So I want to do a league that involves none of the standard 9 categories. So just completely different categories, just to completely throw everyone off. So if people are interested in doing that, I want to hear from you as well. Have you ever done anything like that without any of the standard categories?
No, I haven't. I mean, what kind of categories are you talking? Like, you know, fast break points or technicals, things like that?
Stuff that, you know, occasionally gets thrown. Yeah, look, I want to put fouls in there maybe, 3-point percentage, okay. Like field goals made, free throws made, assist to turnover. Mm-hmm. Steals to turnover, just stuff that's not the standard 9, stuff that people may have played before, like added in as a 10th category or as a replacement for a 9th category, but instead of having them as a one-off addition, having them as every category being an odd one and just really throwing people's ideas off of how to play or how to value guys.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I think it's going to be interesting. So if you are interested in that, let me know and send me an email for that. Or if you're interested in the Roto League, which I'm going to start organizing, I've got quite a few of those responses already. So let me know if you are interested in either of those or both of those. Let's talk Pistons. Stan Van Gundy now in his second season as the general manager, as the coach of the team. They disappointed last season. I think that's fair to say, especially early on. Made the move to get rid of Josh Smith, brought the trade to bring in Reggie Jackson, and they looked a lot better. They were starting to look good even before Jackson came across, before Brandon Jennings got injured. What do you think of this team? Are they a team that pushes for the playoffs, for an 8th seed, for a 7th seed, or do you think they're still mired in that 10 to 11 sort of range?
You know, as much as I want to say that they could make the leap into that, you know, 3rd, 4th tier in the East, I just don't know if I see it. You know, like you said, they did play better after the Reggie Jackson acquisition. I mean, this team looks completely different than it did at the start of last year when, you know, DJ Augustine was a part of the roster, Karan Butler, Gigi Datome, obviously Josh Smith. You know, that seems like years ago that he was back on this Pistons team. So definitely a different look than the team that they threw out on the court to begin last season. I think you have to like the roster a little bit more just, you know, for continuity reasons. And, you know, we saw that the Josh Smith experiment didn't work. The Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond pairing, you know, as productive as it was, and, you know, it was a pairing that's going to win you games and, you know, keep you afloat. But yeah, I think it was clear that wasn't going to work out. You know, we talked on the Bucks podcast earlier this week about Greg Monroe's desire to play center. You know, he's a better fit at the center spot. And that just wasn't going to happen with Andre Drummond around. So I think they made a pretty drastic move to, you know, not to re-sign Greg Monroe. Not that that was necessarily an option for them. You know, I think after they failed to extend him last summer, it was pretty clear that he was going to be leaving Detroit. But I don't know that they were necessarily fine with Monroe leaving, but I think it leaves them in a little bit more flexible position, you know, to go out and build this team the way that Van Gundy wants it built. And I don't know if he necessarily wanted two low post guys, you know, kind of clogging spacing up and keeping another shooter off the floor.
That is a great point. That brings us to the next part of the show, Nick, when we talk about the additions the Pistons made. And they added a few guys. Reggie Bullock came across and Danny Granger came across in a trade along with Marcus Morris. And when the Suns were clearing out cap space, Aaron Baines was signed to what many thought was a bit of an one of the biggest overpays of the summer, to a 3-year, $20 million deal. Steve Blake came across after he was traded about three times this offseason. But the biggest acquisition, I think, is the trade that netted the Pistons Ersan Ilyasova in exchange for Caron Butler. And we talked about how they don't want those two big guys, Munro and Drummond, down low. Well, Ersan is clearly not Munro. He is a much different player, and he harkens back to the Ryan Anderson days in Orlando with Stan Van Gundy, a big man who is a big man in his size, but not necessarily in his style of play, a guy who's going to hit threes. He can take not just threes, but he can take long-range jumpers. But he can be a guy who can get really aggressive in his rebounding as well. He's seen a number of games of him of 15, 16, yeah, up to 18, 19 rebounds a game. And he can get extremely hot with his shooting. I think he's a tremendous fit in Detroit. So let's start off by flowing out some Ersan love. How much did you love the move?
Oh, I mean, as a huge Ersan supporter, I mean, I was a big fan of this move. I think they bought low on Ilyasova and didn't have to give up too much. You know, obviously, Caron Butler ended up being waived by Milwaukee, so he was never really the piece that they were looking for there. So I think for what they got Ersan for, it was a great deal for them. I believe he only has 1 year remaining on his deal, and it was kind of a contract that progressively got a little bit easier to trade every season. So finally, Milwaukee was able to unload him. But yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said there. I think this is a little bit closer to the roster that Van Gundy wants, harkening back to those Magic days with, Ersan kind of serving as that Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis type of guy. A bit of a non-traditional power forward in a lot of ways, but a guy who can step out and shoot it. And, you know, last year he shot the three at almost 40% clip. He's kind of been up and down. I mean, he was down in the upper 20s two seasons ago. So it's a little bit of a hit or miss type of shooter. And I think that's kind of where a lot of his value fell on the trade market. But if you get him in the right situation and he's getting consistent minutes and he's happy with his role, I think he's a guy who could definitely thrive. And you know, he's still only 28 years old. He's not going to be 29 until near the end of the season. So I think he's only on a 1 year deal, like I said, in his previous extension. But this could be a move that is something that they stick with for the future, just because of how young Ilyasova is and how good of a fit it appears to be, at least on paper.
When he played 23 minutes a game last year, he's going to see a significant rise in that. Yeah, look, he didn't, but down the stretch, he started to play pretty big minutes and he was really good. Yeah, averaging only 11.5 points last year, but it is in 23 minutes. His per 36 numbers are outstanding. 18.3 points, 2 threes, 7.6 rebounds, a steal, half a block. Yeah, they're outstanding numbers. Now, he's not going to play 36 minutes, but he's going to be closer to 30 than what he was last season, a lot closer to that. And he's going to be a guy who can push over 1.5 threes, and he's going to have big scoring nights, and he's going to have big rebounding nights. Now, it appears to me that the Yahoo ADP data has come in a little bit on him. He's currently been picked at pick 90. At one stage, he was outside the top 100. I still think you can get him outside the top 100 in certain situations. Where do you like him in leagues? Do you think that he's a top 100 player?
I think he certainly can be, like you said, but I also am a little bit worried that his rebounding numbers might suffer a bit playing next to Drummond. I mean, a guy who vacuums up as many rebounds as just about anybody. And then you have Marcus Morris, you know, another addition that you touched on briefly. A guy who himself played over 25 minutes a game in Phoenix last year. Similar skill set to Ilyasova. You know, a guy who can step it out, attempted almost 4 3-pointers per game last season. He's not quite the rebounder that Ersan is. That's definitely where Ersan has the edge. But you know, Morris is probably a little bit more athletic, and you know, he shoots the three at 36% clip over the last couple of years. So I guess I'm a little bit worried about Morris maybe encroaching on Ilyasova's playing time a bit, just because those guys I think are going to cross over, at that power forward spot. So yeah, I do like Ilyasova probably right around the 100 range, but I'm not sure I'm convinced he's a lock to be inside there.
I'm going to put this to you. I think that Marcus Morris plays most of his time at the three. I think that he starts at the three, and I think he plays the bulk of his minutes at the three, and he will be the starter at the three for at least the first few months of the season and play the bulk of his minutes there. I don't know. He can play four, obviously, but I think that he will play a lot of three this season. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he'll play. I think he'll play the three. I think he could even slide up to center in certain spots. Probably not a ton with this team. I mean, in Phoenix, according to Basketball Reference, he was at center 15% of his minutes last season, which seems a little high. Obviously, right? And Phoenix obviously like to play small as much as any team, and you know, kind of get up and down the court. So I don't think he'll be doing that quite as much in this Van Gundy system. You know, I mean, Van Gundy likes to have a big center in the middle, kind of controlling things, and he has that obviously in Drummond. But yeah, I think he could see a, you know, maybe 70-30 split between power forward and small forward. Like you said, it wouldn't surprise me much if he started the season, you know, in the lineup at small forward. It kind of depends how much this team likes Stanley Johnson, I guess, as a rookie.
I think they do like him a lot, but everything I'm hearing from Detroit is that Marcus Morris will be the starter through training camp, through preseason, and unless Johnson comes in and blows the doors off, which is a possibility, but again, he's a rookie, he's a young guy, he's not a four-year starter in college or anything like that, he's a younger player, it's unlikely that those guys come in and just blow things away and pick everything up so quickly and assimilate themselves into starting lineups. So I would be shocked if Stanley Johnson got more minutes than Marcus Morris to start this season off. And Morris is an okay fantasy guy. He's probably the last round pick in a 12-team league. I don't think he's got a huge ceiling above that. But he could be a solid guy, especially if you're in a deeper league, around that 140 to 150 mark. Yeah, if you want a solid contributor around that area, he's going to have, you know, good value. Marginal upside, but you know, pretty low or pretty high floor. He's not going to drop too much down from that. So I like the acquisition of Marcus Morris. He had a really good stretch towards the end of last season as well. The mental issues I was going to say, but look, the maturity issues is definitely a concern, but maybe he comes out and he's pissed off about getting traded and he plays like super hard and super aggressively. And that does something positive for his game. Unlike his whinging brother who, you know, is likely to sulk and get his way through the season. Morris might be super motivated by this trade and that might really push him somewhere, because if we know there's anyone who's, or any sort of players who are going to be affected by perceived slights, it's going to be the Morris twins. So I think that could be some added motivation for him. Any of these other guys coming across, Aaron Baines, he has to be the backup center, doesn't he? There's no one else who's getting minutes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, they still have Joel Anthony kind of sitting around, but yep. I mean, I feel like Joel Anthony's probably, his better days have been behind him for a while now. The amount of assists he's robbed LeBron of over the years in the Heat uniform, I think just continued to mount. But yeah, I think Baines is the clear backup to Drummond here. You know, a guy who can maybe slide down and play power forward in certain situations, but I think they want to stay away from that. You know, I think that creates a situation just like the Drummond-Monroe pairing where you got two true centers on the court together. So I think, you know, Baines is a very clear backup. I think he's going to have a very defined role as that backup. You know, we've seen Drummond get into foul trouble throughout his career. So there's going to be opportunities for Baines to play. That's for certain. It's just a matter of what that split is going to be on a nightly basis. You know, if Drummond is playing well, does that mean he plays, you know, upper 30s minutes and Baines is on the bench for most of the game? So from a fantasy perspective, it's a little bit difficult to project Baines' value, I think. But, you know, another guy you look at on a per 36 basis and, you know, he averaged a double-double. And yep. You know, obviously that's projected over double the minutes that he played last season in San Antonio. But, you know, Detroit paid up for him for a reason.
And the thing is that, you say that his per 36 is projected to a double-double, but when he actually played and played starters minutes, he was pretty much a lock for a double-double anyway. So those games that Tim Duncan would sit out and Aaron Baines would get the start, you could pencil Baines in for a 12 and 10 with a block or two, and he's a really high percentage shooter for a big man. Like I'm talking a 50, you know, 50% from the field, over 50% from the field, over 85% from the free throw line. So if something happened, we don't want it to happen, but if something happens to Andre Drummond and they have to play Baines 30 or 28, 29 minutes a night, he's going to have fantasy relevancy because of both of those percentages. He's a good rebounder, not a great shot blocker, but he can score and he can rebound and he can help percentages. And he's going to be obviously on waiver wires. And he's going to be a name that you have to remember because he will have to be forced into big action. And he's not going to hurt you in those potentially crucial percentage categories. So he's someone to keep an eye on. The other guys like Steve Blake. Now, Steve Blake will play a bigger role at the start of the season when Brandon Jennings is out. So deeper leagues, if you're looking for that 20-minute a night point guard, Steve Blake is probably going to be that guy unless they go with Spencer Dinwiddie. How do you see them playing that? Is Blake going to be that primary backup?
I think it will be Blake just because he's the safer option. Yep. Right now. I mean, you're looking at a guy who's 34, 35, just kind of the epitome of a backup point guard and a guy that I think any team wants Steve Blake. It's just a matter of whether or not you can afford him. Yeah, just a great guy to have as far as depth, you know, just running it off and stepping in and being able to pick up a system. I mean, from an effectiveness standpoint, he's certainly waned the last couple of years. I mean, shot just 37%. each of the last two seasons, kind of been a journeyman. You know, he's spent time with three different teams over that span. Yeah, I think he'll be the main backup to start. And like I said, his, you know, just the experience factor. I think this Detroit team has playoff aspirations. So while Dinwiddie might be the higher upside guy, you know, he's less experienced. There's more of a, you know, opportunity for error, I guess, with him. And I think they'll probably want to be cautious and play Blake as much as they can behind Reggie Jackson, just as a way to, you know, to ensure that they're not losing too much when Jackson's off the floor.
Yeah. And he's going to be a sneaky sort of guy that if you want to get maybe four assists out of someone on a weekend of a head-to-head matchup, you know, Steve Blake could provide four assists in his, you know, 20-minute role as a backup. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that last year, in his 19 minutes a game last year, he gave you 3.6 assists. And that can be handy. If he has a back-to-back a Saturday and Sunday, and he could give you 7 assists in a backup role, that can be useful in a head-to-head league. And then you quickly drop him after that. But you can't ignore, you know, that sort of contribution in a category that's really hard to find. So he's going to be there. Reggie Bullock came across. I don't think there's really any future for Reggie Bullock in the NBA. He's shown pretty much zero in his two stops so far as a first-round draft pick. He's already been traded twice. Any hope for Reggie Bullock?
He's a guy I really liked, actually, coming out of college, North Carolina, just kind of the prototypical 3-and-D type of guy. I mean, I think he kind of fit the Chris Middleton type of mold, the Darrell Wrights, you know, guys that we've seen succeed in this league before. 6'7", 205, just a, kind of a prototypical 2-3 guy you can swing between both wing positions. But yeah, like you said, he's yet to show anything right now at this level. And you know, he was on a good Clippers team as a rookie in 2013-14. So at that point, it kind of looked like he just wasn't ready to contribute to what was a good rotation. And then he goes to Phoenix last season and only ends up playing 11 games for them. So, you know, if you couldn't, and that was a pretty shallow Phoenix rotation, definitely, by the end of the season. And, you know, if you can't play there, I don't know where the hope is. But, I mean, he's still young. He's still going into only his third NBA season. So I think it's too early to close the book on him. But like you said, he hasn't quite been the player, you know, that people thought he was going to be, you know, coming out of North Carolina. But, you know, still, like I said, still a younger guy, still only 24. And he shot a decent percent from three. I mean, he was right around 39% last season with the Clippers. And then, you know, didn't make a three-pointer in his 11 games with Phoenix. So that was a little bit less than encouraging. But, I think if you get him in the right situation where he can just hold down a consistent role, I think that's so big for guys like this who haven't really gotten a true chance. You know, your only time to come off or to come into the game is, you know, you're coming off cold after sitting the first 40 minutes. And, you know, that's a little bit harder than going into a game and knowing that, you know, I'm guaranteed to get these 8 or 9 minutes. And I think that can go a long way for a player's confidence. So, you know, Van Gundy's willing to, you know, to give him that opportunity at least to start the season and be their 9th, 10th, 11th man, just, you know, a guy who's going to be in the game on a consistent basis. I think then this is the time that Reggie Bullock is going to prove that he, you know, belongs in the NBA. But I don't want to say it's his last chance if he doesn't, but, you know, third team in 3 seasons, it doesn't look good.
The Phoenix one was troubling for me because, look, on the Clippers, you can understand this guy's not going to get minutes. But he came across to Phoenix who had gotten rid of Goran Dragic, Isaiah Thomas had gone. And he still couldn't, you know, force his way into really any meaningful minutes. Even then, Brandon Knight had that injury as well. He just couldn't force his way into anything. And that was made me go, okay, maybe there's something a bit not right here. But again, he's got another opportunity. We'll see how it goes. The players that the Pistons lost, there's not much to really talk about here. Apart from Munro, who we went into in quite a big bit of detail on the Bucks podcast. Tayshaun Prince is gone. Caron Butler's gone. Sean Williams is gone. And Quincy Miller is gone. There's no real, yet obviously there's a lot of veteran leadership gone with Prince and Butler going. But Steve Blake replaces some of that and coming across. Yeah, Aaron Baines can be somewhat of a leader with championship experience as well. But Munro's obviously the biggest loss, and they hope that Ilyasova, while not the same quality of player that Munro is, the way that he fits the team might be an overall upgrade just in terms of the way they want to run the offense. What about the young players on this team? Okay, we want to talk rookies from the last couple of years. We've spoken about Spencer Dinwiddie already, owner of probably a top three mustache in the NBA, which, you know, always has him right up there in my estimations. The other two guys drafted this year, Stanley Johnson and Darren Hilliard. We'll start just quickly on Darren Hilliard, a second-round guy who signed a 3-year deal, and I've heard nothing but positive things about him. Now, it's going to be hard for him to crack the rotation as well, behind Jody Meeks, KCP, Stanley Johnson, Marcus Morris, Reggie Bullock's involved there. But as a second-round guy to get a 3-year deal, granted it's not fully guaranteed the whole time, I think he's an interesting guy for really deep dynasty leagues because none of those guys ahead of him, while they're all better than him at the moment, they're not locked-in all-star caliber players. What's your take on Healy? Do you think that he has got a chance to leapfrog a couple of these guys this year?
I think he has an outside chance. And like you said, that three-year deal can be a little bit misleading. You know, a lot of those second-round deals are where, you know, I think what Kendall Marshall just signed a four-year deal with the Sixers, and I think it's only, you know, one or maybe not even a full-year guaranteed. So, yeah, this is one of those deals that, yeah, I think they're confident in him. I think for a second-round pick to get any guaranteed years on that is impressive. So they definitely see something in him. But like you said, he profiles and kind of matches the same type of player as Reggie Bullock, as Jody Meeks. And even he'll probably be playing behind Stanley Johnson if he sees any minutes at the three. And obviously they have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming back for a third season as well. But, yeah, I like Hilliard. He profiles as kind of that prototypical shooting guard at 6'6", 215. He's already got an NBA body, good three-point shooter. Not great three-point shooter, but an adequate three-point shooter. And a guy who made, you know, nearly 80 threes in college last season. So that's more than two a game for a very good Villanova team. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be a guy who probably doesn't start in the rotation, you know, when the season kicks off. And if he does, it's, you know, a few minutes at the end of games. But he's certainly a guy who could work his way in. And, you know, having that guaranteed deal kind of gives him some more time to do that, where, you know, a lot of second round picks will come in on a partially guaranteed deal. And then, you know, the deadline to guarantee those deals comes around in mid-January. And, you know, half the time by then, they've only played in four, five, six games, depending on where the team is at. So I think the fact that he has the entire season to kind of develop and fit into his role is certainly going to help just from a longevity standpoint and getting comfortable. So, you know, not a guy that you definitely don't want to target him in any drafts. I mean, I think that goes without saying, but not a guy who you wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if he worked his way into this rotation, because like you said, they do have a lot of names and a lot of established guys ahead of them, but, you know, none of those guys are, you really get too excited about. Caldwell Pope improved last season. Jody Meeks has been a solid guy, but yeah, the upside is fairly limited with both of those players.
Would you be surprised if I told you that Darren Hilliard was drafted in the Red Rock Auction Dynasty League that we had over the weekend?
I would be surprised. Yeah, what did he go for?
I don't know. I think Mark Roberts got in for a dollar. We had we went 400 players deep in that league, so that's.
Oh, is this the full salary league?
No, not that one. This is a different one. This is, the full salary league was in. I think you only go about 160 deep in that one. That was an interesting one, but this was an auction dynasty startup league, 400 players, 16 teams, 25 players per roster. And there was quite a few. I'm going to quiz you on this, because have you ever heard of the name Vasilios Stamoulis?
Yeah, isn't he? He's like a Greek guard, right?
He got drafted.
Yeah.
He got drafted.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case.
You said you're going 25 players deep per roster?
Yeah, so 400 in total. 400 total players got drafted. So Vasilios Stamoulis got drafted in that. So that was, I thought that was an interesting pick. He went quite early, actually. He was nominated quite early. No one chucked anything extra than a dollar on him. But let's talk. I want to hear your question, because I reckon.
I was just going to ask you if anybody snapped up Antoine Walker. Is that off the pile in case he comes back?
No, no. Mark was tempted to grab Reggie Miller. I know that just in case he got the itch to come out and play a couple of games, but no one went with Antoine Walker. I think Stamoulis was probably the oddest pick out of that lot of players. Considering he went up there and half the people had no. I couldn't even recall. I had to look him up. And he's the Greek Steve Nash.
Has he been a guy that might come over? I mean, obviously I've heard of him just on the international game. You know, his name comes up with Eurobasket and stuff like that. But is he just doesn't have interest in playing over here?
I don't think so. He was drafted 11 years ago. He was drafted back in 2004. I think the Mavericks hold his rights. I haven't heard anything of him, of any risk of him coming over. Maybe whoever drafted, I don't remember who drafted him. Whoever drafted him, maybe he's got some inside word into Greek basketball. But that was an interesting pick. But let's get into Stanley Johnson. He was the number 8 pick. People were a little bit miffed at that selection, thinking, oh, why did the Pistons pass on Justice Winslow? But then Johnson came out in Orlando at Summer League and clearly played better than Winslow. What did you think of the pick at the time it happened? What do you think of it now? And how do you see him fitting into this team? And how do you see him fitting into fantasy leagues this season?
I could not believe the pick at the time, to be honest. I was very, very high on Justice Winslow going into this draft. I still am, you know, and obviously you said Stanley Johnson did outplay him in Orlando. I think that was pretty clear. Winslow played pretty well in his own right. I think Johnson just played that well that he overshadowed him. But it was just surprising. You know, I think you look at his numbers at Arizona and they're good, not great. I also think he faced, you know, kind of some unrealistic expectations coming in as, you know, in some rankings, the number one overall prospect joining a really, really good Arizona team where he really wasn't asked to do that much. You know, you look at a team that's experienced, a team that was coming off of an Elite Eight run. And obviously they got bounced by my Wisconsin Badgers 2 years in a row. I was going to throw that in there. But I just think if he had he gone somewhere else, had he gone somewhere else, I think his numbers would have been a little bit more inflated. I think he would have been on display more as a creator. And I think that's what we saw in Summer League. You know, he was finally kind of able to get work outside of a college system that's so much more structured. And, you know, he's such a good one-on-one player and a guy you can kind of do it all. I just don't think he was necessarily asked to fulfill his whole potential, you know, in 1 year at Arizona. You know, had he stayed a couple more years and then kind of taken over as the number one guy there, things might have been different. But just the amount of talent around him there kind of limited what he was able to show off. But and on draft night, I was watching the draft at the RotoWire office with a bunch of guys, and Kyle was there. Obviously, he's a Detroit Pistons fan, as you know. And yeah, and I'm sure you watched the draft. I don't know if you watched it live, but the picks were coming across a minute or two early on Twitter, which was good and bad. You know, at that point, it looked like once I think the Nuggets passed on Winslow at six or seven, or the Kings passed on him at six, the Nuggets passed on him at seven, and all of a sudden Detroit's up at eight. And, you know, I walked over to Kyle, gave him a pat on the back, and was like, congrats, I think you got the steal of the draft right here. And then 30 seconds later, it comes through that they're going to stay with John Johnson. And I mean, I couldn't believe it in the office. And it's looking good so far, I guess. I just think, I still can't believe they passed on Winslow. I just think he was such a safe pick. I think he fits better defensively than Stanley Johnson does. Not that Johnson's a bad defender. I just think he's a little bit unproven on that end relative to Winslow. But still, I mean, going into the season, I think there's a lot to like about Stanley Johnson. I know I listened to a couple podcasts with Stan Van Gundy over the summer, and he, you know, I think this was in probably last month sometime. He said, you know, Stanley Johnson has a chance to start at either shooting guard or small forward for this team. Mm-hmm. So you know, that could just be typical coach speak, especially a coach who's only going into his second season saying, you know, every roster spot is up for grabs. Every, you know, nobody's spot is safe type of thing. And you hear that from every coach every year. But yeah, I think if anybody means it, it's probably Stan Van Gundy, right?
Pretty much. I think that Johnson and Winslow are going to be compared for their whole career. No, at least the early part of their career, it's going to be what did Johnson do? What did Winslow do? For the exact reasons that you mentioned, that everyone thought Winslow's going to Detroit, and then he didn't, and then, you know, Johnson plays the same position. They're going to be constantly compared to each other. I think that Johnson's, look, he might start, but I don't think there's any chance he cracks 30 minutes a game this season. I've got him projected at 25, and I think that might be even a little bit generous. I don't think he's got really a spot in standard leagues for this season. He's currently being picked at 137. I don't think that that's worth it. I can see that people do love rookies. They get excited about rookies. They love taking a flyer pick on them, and I can understand that. But to me, the upside of him is not that high. I don't think he's not going to be like a 15, 16-point scorer. What does he do well? I think that's the question that I want to ask. What does he do well that can be something that he can hang his fantasy hat on?
I don't think he does anything spectacularly.
That's a correct answer.
It's just a typical, you know, the kind of cliche. He does a lot of things really, really well, but nothing at an elite level, at least right now. I mean, I think he's underrated as a shooter a little bit. 37%, and obviously that's using the college three-point line, but that usually translates pretty well. So 37% shooter there. I mean, a guy that, you know, almost gives you, you know, probably – I'm trying to prorate these numbers per 36. I mean, it'd be right around 8 rebounds a game per 36. So, yeah, I mean, he's a big guy for his size and his age. I mean, he's had an NBA body since his junior year of high school. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to be much of an issue from an adjustment standpoint.
He's ripped. I guess, like, he's massive.
He's huge. Yeah, he's absolutely huge. I think he's kind of an underrated athlete too. He doesn't look like Gerald Green when he goes to the rack, but he's, you know, the numbers are there. You know, the vertical looks good. He's a fast player. So, there's a lot to like about him. There's really not much to dislike, that's for sure. I think that might be the better way to put it. There's not one way that you look at his game and think there's a huge deficiency in any area.
Yeah, look, I think that's a perfect way. That he's not bad in any area. He's not going to be outstanding in any area just yet. He's going to just sort of be below average in most categories this season, and that's not a great recipe for fantasy success. But look, if he is in a role where he gets 30 minutes, which I do find doubtful, then you want to look at him. But in the mid-20s, he's not going to do one thing well enough. Like, you could have someone in the mid-20s that is a shot-blocking machine. John Henson, yeah, two block shots a game in 18 minutes. And that's usable. You can use that on and off your roster. But a guy who's below average in every category at 25 minutes, there's not much use for that because he just doesn't have that one big spike where you can go, yeah, I want his blocks. I want his scoring. I want his 2 threes a game. I want his 4 assists a game. He's just going to be right there at these below average numbers that, you know, he'll develop, definitely. I just don't see a huge amount of value in him this season. What about anyone you see that does have big value? Who's your breakout candidate on this team, Nick?
This is kind of like the Bucks roster that we talked about on Monday, yep. Where you just see a lot of guys that you like, but not a lot of guys that you point to as having a huge ceiling. I had Johnson down for that one, and I think he's kind of the obvious choice just because of the upside. I mean, he and I think Reggie Jackson are the two guys that you look at on this roster and think, you know, that they could really make a huge leap. And you could probably lump Andre Drummond into that category. Although he's already been so good, he's probably not a huge room for improvement there. I say either Johnson or Reggie Jackson. We only saw Jackson in a small sample size with Detroit last season, 27 games. And I mean, he was pretty spectacular. I think the shooting percentage leaves a little bit to be desired. I mean, he got it up close to, you know, if you round up 44%, which is definitely livable for an NBA point guard. Obviously, you kind of want that over 45, but, you know, Jackson's still young and a guy who has such a high usage rate and you know, takes a lot of tough shots. So that's understandable. I think if he carries over those numbers that he played with in Detroit rather than OKC, I think you like him a lot more from a season long perspective. If you're looking at his totals from last season, you're going to see he only shot 30% from three, but you know, that number was up to 34% when he was with Detroit. The volume from three point range was down. I think that's something you probably want to see with him. I mean, he's not an elite 3-point shooter, and you know, he went from taking 28% of his attempts from beyond the arc in OKC to just 19 with Detroit. So, you know, getting into the lane a little bit more, functioning as more of a true point guard within Stan Van Gundy's offense. And I think there's a lot to like there. I mean, you see, even the assist numbers are probably the biggest thing. And I'm sure you want to talk about that, yeah, going definitely. From 4.3 per game with OKC up to over 9 a game. And I think he had at least one 20 assist game, didn't he? I mean, didn't he have like a 20 and 20 game?
He had
a stretch with Detroit. I mean,
yeah, he did.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy
that and a couple of triple doubles as well.
Right. Right. Not a guy that we really thought of as a triple double type of guy in OKC. And obviously part of that was playing behind Westbrook and not seeing the requisite minutes to put up numbers like that. But, you know, even if he wasn't doing it the most efficient way, I think that's the biggest knock on him. He was still putting up huge numbers. And, you know, if you're in a league that doesn't value percentages too much, I think Jackson could be a huge contributor in those counting stats.
I think that he is a massive, massive sleeper for this season. So I'm going to have him as my sleeper guy when we talk about that. But he's currently being drafted at pick 83 in Yahoo, and that is ludicrous. He is I've got him ranked inside the top 40. You don't get 9 assists from anybody. And look, yeah, his 3-point shooting is not good, but he's still probably going to hit you at least one a game. He's not a big steals guy, but he's still probably going to get you one a game. But 9 assists, 4.5 rebounds, 16 points, big free throw percentage. That's all superb. Like, he has fantastic value. Now, he's not as good as those upper echelon point guards, but in that mid-range when you're deciding between, say, him and Jeff Teague and Kyle Lowry and Mike Conley, he fits right in with those guys. He doesn't fit at 83 with Jarrett Jack and Darren Williams. He's not that player. He is miles better than all those guys. Like, you'd want to have him ahead of all those guys. You have him ahead of Michael Carter Williams. You have him in that Mike Conley, Goran Dragic, Kyle Lowry, Jeff Teague sort of range. Where would you put him ahead with those guys? Lowry, Teague, Conley, Dragic, Jackson. Who do you have as the pick of the bunch, or you find them fairly interchangeable?
I think you're right to say that those guys are all in kind of their own tier. That makes a lot of sense. That's kind of that second, third tier behind the Currys, the Pauls, you know, the guys that we just know are going to have their production. I probably like Jeff Teague a little bit more. You know, better team, better teammates surrounding him, more potential for assists there. I don't really like this Raptors team at all. I don't think they improved. I think they needed to make some changes this offseason. They really didn't. So, I mean, I would be tempted to, you know, to take Reggie Jackson ahead of Kyle Lowry. But other than that, I mean, I think he fits, like you said, he fits right in that tier. I don't think he's close to being drafted at around 100. And that seems absolutely ridiculous, even the 80s or 90s. And especially with Brandon Jennings missing the first couple months of the season, it sounds like late November at the absolute earliest for Jennings, and you know, coming off of such a serious Achilles injury, you never even know what kind of shape he's going to be in, or you know, how long it's going to take him to really get everything back. And you know, I'm worried about Brandon Jennings, a guy who relies so much on his athleticism. You know, I mean, it's not like he's coming back as a Steve Blake type of player where he's, you know, kind of slow, plodding. You know, I mean, Jennings, as the way he plays is so much predicated on, you know, creating space and kind of slithering around defenders and quick, agile moves. So, I'm not convinced that he's going to be ready to come back and play, you know, basically split point guard minutes with Reggie Jackson. So I think, you know, the potential for big minutes is certainly there at the bare minimum for the first 2 months of the season. And I think by then he probably will have solidified himself as the guy, you know, over Jennings, and he'll probably hover around 30 minutes a game.
I'm certain of that. I don't think that, look, Jennings will probably come back. I've got him coming back sometime in mid-December, but he's not coming back at full strength. He's going to take games off. He's going to be on limited minutes. He'll struggle to play 20 minutes a game this season, Jennings. You said he's such, and look, we know he's not a good shooter, Brandon Jennings, but so much of his value is from his extreme speed and his ability to get in and out of places tight. Now, he's a pretty decent playmaker, but a lot of that is based on his speed to get to spots and then hit the open shooter with his ability to drive fast and all that sort of stuff. And that's going to be reduced significantly. And even if he was healthy, I think that they want to go with Reggie Jackson. They paid Reggie Jackson like they want to go with him. Brandon Jennings is in the last year of his contract. I don't see Brandon Jennings cutting into Reggie Jackson's minutes. So I'm all aboard Reggie Jackson. If people are picking him at pick 80, I'm going to have him on every single one of my teams, and I'm going to end up getting probably 40 spots of extra value just by grabbing him 10 spots ahead of his ADP. I think that's a ridiculous ADP to have in there. Maybe people are thinking that it's Brandon Jennings, and I'm going to talk a bit more about him later on, but Reggie Jackson, that's crazy value at that point. The guy I had as a breakout, Nick, was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He was given massive license last season to shoot. He went up from 6 field goal attempts a game up to 12 field goal attempts a game, played 32 minutes, played all 82 games. Didn't, you know, convert those shots really well. He was at 40%. His free throws needed to come up. But what I like from him is in the last month of the season, he had his minutes go up and his efficiency went up as well. He was at 44 and 73. So there's some pretty decent numbers. He shot his threes at 36% as well. They're all up on his season averages. He was at 15.6 points, 2 threes a game. You're getting 3.5 rebounds and 1.5 steals. And that's the sort of KCP that I'm hoping we can see this season. He's a guy who definitely has that 2 threes and 1.5 steals upside. 15, 16 point guy, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. That's his upside. I think that he can be a breakout guy and find himself, you know, pretty solidly inside the top 100 for most fantasy leagues. He's currently being drafted at 140, so the last pick or second last round. I think you get some pretty tremendous value there from him. Well, not tremendous value, but, you know, 2 or 3 rounds worth of value out of him. I think that he's poised. He's heading into his third season as well. We know that's a key indicator for guys to really start to break out as well. So I'm really excited for what we're going to see from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'm not worried at all about Jody Meeks taking his minutes, because Meeks signed last year on the contract and he had no impact on Caldwell-Pope, even when he came back from that injury.
Yeah, it was certainly a good sign to see how much Caldwell-Pope played throughout last season. He started all 82 games, averaged over 31 minutes. And I think that was a little surprising after the Jody Meeks signing. And obviously, Meeks missed quite a bit of time at the beginning of the season. But, you know, I think Caldwell-Pope is solidly entrenched at that two-guard spot. I mean, they didn't play him that much last season for a reason. Like you said, the steals potential, I think, is what jumps out most outside of the three-point shooting. It's not going to give you a ton from a rebounding perspective or an assist perspective. But I think, I mean, he really could ultimately be the difference between this team challenging for the 8 seed or, you know, just kind of being where they've been the last 6-7 years.
And absolutely,
that's just kind of toiling between, you know, 10 and 12 in the East. And, you know, he can't shoot 40% from the field. I think that's one thing you have to look at. You know, he did up the 3-point percentage to a respectable, you know, 35% for a guy who's supposed to be a knockdown 3-point shooter. I think you'd like that a little bit higher. I mean, he's attempting almost 5.5 a game, and that number should probably stay pretty steady. But it's, you know, it's other things. It's outside of 3-point shooting. It's, you know, when a defender comes out on you and, you know, being able to take a dribble and hit that 15 footer, get to the hoop and finish. So I think that's kind of the next step in Caldwell Pope's game. But I'm a little bit worried, you know, that Stanley Johnson might end up seeing, you know, taking a couple of those minutes away at shooting guard, but, you know, like we just talked about, he's probably not going to be ready to accept that role, at least to start. So it's Caldwell Pope's going to have every opportunity to solidify himself as another 30-plus minute guy for this team. It's just a matter of whether or not he can be efficient enough on a nightly basis to hold on to that.
You want him to go to 43 from the field and 37 from three. That'd be his aim. You want him also to become a 75% free throw shooter as well, because he was hovering at less than 70 for most of the season last year. And I think those things are all, you know, they're reasonable goals. They're not crazy goals. I'm not asking Andre Drummond to become an 80% free throw shooter. I think for him to go 43, 37, 75 is definitely within reach for him. And that brings his scoring up. You know, we can have 15 with two threes and 1.5 steals and 4 rebounds. That's not crazy high. But that's pretty nice value for a shooting guard heading into his third season. Second season in Van Gundy's system, I really like what we're going to see from, I hope what we're going to see from Caldwell Pope this season. Now, I've mentioned who my sleeper was already, Nick. It's Reggie Jackson, clearly. Is there anyone else on this team who you think has got really good sleeper value?
I think Aaron Baines, and this kind of goes into the context that we talked about already, and, you know, knock on wood here, that Andre Drummond doesn't go down. But like you said, if he does, there's really no one else on this roster to absorb those minutes at center. You know, we said Marcus Morris has played some center in Phoenix, but that's not what Detroit wants to do with him. And obviously they don't want to play Joel Anthony any more than they have to. So, you know, in the event that Drummond gets hurt, you know, Drummond's going to find himself in foul trouble on a lot of nights. I think you can mine a lot of value out of Aaron Baines if you use him smartly. Not a guy you probably want in your lineup every single night, but, you know, like you said, when he's been given the opportunity to see starters type of minutes, he's almost a lock for a low double-double, a 14 and 10. And I think that's fine out of a player like Baines, that you're not relying on him to carry your fantasy team, but he's a guy that could give you really great value and as a late pick in the draft, guy that, you know, leaving San Antonio usually doesn't help players. But I think he's a guy who's probably ready to accept a bigger role and at least a potential for a bigger role with Detroit. So he's a guy I would look at. And the other guy I had down, this is probably a super sleeper, you know, in many ways, is Brandon Jennings, you know, a guy, obviously a bigger name guy, but a guy who has a ton of question marks. And we kind of just went over all the negative side of what he's coming off of with that Achilles injury. But it is also easy to forget how good he was right before the injury. And he was pretty much playing the best basketball, arguably, of his career.
Oh, I'd say definitely.
Right. I think the Pistons were like 12-3 right after trading Josh Smith.
He was blowing up. He was going crazy at that time.
He was so great. And that's what sucks so much about that injury last year was when it happened. You know, not Detroit was kind of charging up the East at that point, and Jennings was a big part of that. He kind of galvanized that team. And, you know, just for that to happen, it was definitely tough to see. But, you know, if he can come back and be at full strength, and obviously Achilles injuries aren't quite what they used to be maybe even 10 years ago. If he can give you anything, you know, anywhere close to where he was, you know, in late December, early January before the injury, I think you can get some value there. But like we said, he's going to be behind Jackson. I know Stan Van Gundy did say over the summer, this was another thing that he mentioned on the Zach Lowe podcast, that he thinks that those two can play together. And I'm not super convinced of that. He basically talked about it in the context of Reggie Jackson playing the two.
Yep.
And that makes sense, obviously, as he's a bigger guy, a guy who's capable of playing better defense on opposing twos. But I mean, is that a pairing that you think could work well together in certain, like, in obviously in small doses?
It doesn't on the surface. I don't go, yeah, let's put these two guys together. But Jackson played a fair bit of two, and he played with Westbrook quite a bit in OKC, especially right during their playoff runs, and he was really successful at it. So he can play the two. He can play off the ball. He's not a great three-point shooter, but you know what? Jennings is a decent three-point shooter. For as bad as a shooter he is, he can knock down threes. And you mentioned how well he was playing. Look, when Smith got waived, these are some of the numbers that he put up. He had a 25-5-6 game with 5 threes, 24-3-3 with 4 threes, 35-7 with 5 threes, 14-4-6, 14-4-8, 20-11 with 3 threes, 34-10 with 4 threes, 37-3 with 8 threes, 24-21. Look, they're crazy numbers. He had 3 30-point games in the month between Smith getting waived and him getting injured. He had a 20-assist game, 2 double-doubles. You know, I can't even count how many multiple 3-pointer games he had. He was putting up, look, such good numbers. And I'm a bigger fan of Brandon Jennings than so many people. He gets hated on a ton in the league for his indiscriminate shooting, which sometimes is really ugly. But I'm a big fan of him. But Nick, you mentioned you've got him as a sleeper. I've got him actually as an overrated guy because he's getting picked at pick 103. That is way too high.
That's way too high, yeah.
Look, for as good as he is, and look, if he is healthy, if he was healthy and he was playing 32 minutes a night, he's a guy that I would look at in a punt field goal percentage build. He's a top 50 guy because he's going to be 7-8 assists, 2 threes a game, 1.5 steals, big scoring numbers. He puts up great fantasy numbers. But I can't justify it at pick 100. It's not happening at pick 100. It's, yeah, look, last pick, Stash him on your injured reserve. That's great, but not a pick 100. It's not happening there.
No, it's so tough to trust guys coming off of a serious injury like that. And, you know, coming off of an ACL tear is one thing, but I think a torn Achilles is even tougher to come back from, especially like we've talked about a couple times now, just how much Brandon Jennings relies on his speed and explosion.
Yep. Look, it is a harder injury to come back than an ACL. And it's going to be interesting this season to watch, you know, three guys coming back from that injury, Anderson Varejao, Brandon Jennings, and the other person who has completely slipped my mind is the most high profile one. Oh, Wes Matthews. That's the other guy. We've got three guys coming back from torn Achilles injuries this season when the NBA really hasn't had, you know, huge spates of Achilles injuries, but last season we had three of them. Who do you think's overvalued?
I don't know. I was thinking KCP at first, but I think you talked me out of that a little bit ago. So I think I'll go with Jody Meeks. He's a guy who's still, I think, kind of riding high off of that throwaway season with the Lakers 2 years ago.
That was such a weird season.
It was. And he gave you great production that year, though. I mean, it's 16 points a game, a couple assists, a couple of rebounds, over 40% from three on more than five attempts per game. So that's great. I mean, 46% from the field. I mean, he was limited by the back injury to start last season and never really got on track. I mean, the 3-point percentage sunk to 34%. That was his lowest since his rookie year. So you even coming off that bad season, I still feel like he carries the knockdown, you know, 40%+ 3-point shooter type of reputation that he kind of honed 2 years ago in LA. And I think that's just not going to happen. I think that was kind of a fluky year. He's not going to play 33 minutes a game for this team. He's not even going to come close to that. KCP is going to play over him. I think Stanley Johnson will probably end up playing over him. And, you know, later in the season, if Stan Van Gundy's serious about playing Jennings and Jackson together, even Reggie Jackson could end up kind of taking away some minutes at the two. So I'm not super high on Jody Meeks coming into, you know, what's going to be his age 29 season.
In the last 2 months of the season, Jody Meeks actually shot 41% from three for 2 months, which is a little surprising to me. I didn't think he was shooting them that well to end the season, but he wasn't playing. He was only playing 24 minutes a game, and everything you say I agree with, but he was actually, so maybe he'd recovered from that back injury and he was starting to hit them better, but I don't see him anything more than a bench contributor for this team. I don't think he's cutting into KCP's minutes. I think he'll struggle to get, I think he'll struggle to get 20 minutes a night this season. If someone thinks that Jody Meeks is going to develop back into that, and he was like, I can't remember off the top of my head, he was probably a top 60 guy in that season for the Lakers. He's not doing that. He's not becoming a top 60 player. Now, we've covered a few people. Who do you think is a player who's limited by their playing time? And if they're in a perfect situation, then they become a really good fantasy guy. Who's that guy? To me, it's Brandon Jennings, who we just covered. That if he was a 35-minute guy, he's a top 50 guy. Is there someone else that you think is really limited by their current situation?
Yeah, I mean, again, kind of like Milwaukee, this is a team that you like a lot of guys, but there's just kind of some roadblocks for a couple of players. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Baines is probably the obvious one, a guy who's never really been unleashed for a full starter's, you know, potential type of minutes for a full season. So I think, you know, in the event that Andre Drummond, something happens there, he's a guy to keep an eye on. The Ilyasova-Morris tandem, you know, we kind of already talked about the overlap there, and obviously I know you think Morris is going to see a lot of minutes at the three, and I think he will too, but I think those guys could kind of end up sharing minutes to the point where both of their values are a little bit limited.
Yeah, look. If either of those guys, if Ilyasova was playing 34 minutes a night, he could be a real stud, and so could Marcus Morris, but they're not going to be that. I think neither of them will get to 30 minutes. Ilyasova will probably play 28, 29, Morris at 25, 26. But yeah, if they're in bigger roles, we could expect a fair bit more from them. We haven't touched on one player who is probably their best player. That might be debatable, but Andre Drummond. I feel like the ceiling for him, he's still pretty high. He can still, look, he was disappointing last season, especially to start the season. He definitely got it turned around. But what happened was his 60% field goal percentage had dropped significantly as Van Gundy was using him in a completely different manner. He got his field goal percentage back up to 51 for the season. He was shooting at 56 for the last month of the season. So things got back up, but he was at over 60 for the previous two seasons. He's a beast on the boards. He's a great offensive rebounder. He averaged 5.5 offensive rebounds last season, 13.5 rebounds in total, almost 2 blocks a game, a steal a game. What's your take on Drummond? How much better does he become? Is he a guy that pushes for an all-star berth this season? Can you see him making that sort of a leap heading into his fourth season?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I think there's going to be some all-star spots open in the East. First of all, the Hawks aren't getting four. They shouldn't have got four last season. They're sure as hell not getting four this season. So I think Drummond is certainly a candidate to grab one of those spots. It's just crazy that he's only going into his fourth NBA season. I mean, this guy, it's unbelievable. The athleticism. He's one of my favorite players in the league. I think just he fits that Dwight Howard mold that Stan Van Gundy wants out of his center. You know, big guy. He's going to take care of every rebound. He's going to defend the basket. He's not quite the defender that Dwight Howard was, obviously, but he's that centerpiece in the middle. And I think he's only going to play center this season. That's going to help. He played a little bit of power forward in certain lineups last year. Didn't love that. But you know, now that he's going to stay in the paint, you mentioned to start the season, the field goal percentage was the main issue. And you look, he attempted 30% of his shots last season in the 3 to 10 foot range, which is way too high for a guy who really can't do much outside of the restricted area. And, you know, if you look at his rookie season, 82% of his shots came within 0 to 3 feet. And that was the exact same number in his second season. And all of a sudden last year, his attempts within 0 to 3 feet. So basically the restricted area goes down to 68%.
It's a big drop off.
Yeah, right. And he's being pulled away from the basket. And it just didn't make sense why he's extending his range. It's obviously you want a guy like Drummond to be able to step out and give you something, but if that's not part of his game, you don't want him to force it. And I thought that was interesting. I heard Stan Van Gundy comment on this situation. He was actually talking about Greg Monroe, and he also mentioned it, and he basically said it applies to Drummond as well. He said he'd been criticized, and his coaching staff had been criticized for neither of those guys developing anything outside of 5 feet. And basically he said, you're right. Yeah, we probably should be coaching these guys up a little bit more to extend their range. But he said at the same time, they're comfortable around the hoop. Yeah, we don't want to force them to do something that they don't want to do, to go and start, launching 15 footers. If they can't make them, it's not going to help anybody. So he said they didn't want to deploy them in the mid range or even trying to step out and shoot threes or anything until they're actually comfortable doing it. So maybe this is the off season that Andre Drummond develops a reliable 8-footer, just a baseline kind of Brook Lopez type of shot. I don't necessarily see that happening. He hasn't really demonstrated much touch outside of dunking really at all in his first three seasons. Honestly, it's ridiculous. No, but
exactly.
That's reflected in his free throw percentage. Typically you don't see the centers that shoot well from the mid range and then the rare few that can step out and shoot threes generally shoot at least like a 65-70% clip from the line. And Drummond was hovering around 38-39% for most of last season.
Let's talk about that free throw percentage. There's a couple of things that I need to make clear. If you draft Andre Drummond, you cannot be competitive in free throw percentage. I don't care who you've got. I don't care if you've got James Harden. You cannot be competitive in free throw percentage. So get that out of your head straight away. Don't draft James Harden and then back it up with Andre Drummond in the second round thinking that he's going to cancel it out, because he's not. It is impossible. You cannot do it. So get that out of your head. You cannot make up for his free throw percentage. If you draft Andre Drummond, you are punting free throws. Done. In roto leagues, he's pretty much undraftable. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, like you said, the free throw percentage drags it down so much. And, it's easy to look at, the scoring and the rebounding and even the blocks numbers, almost at one steal a game, which I think you like too. But that free throw percentage, and they're going to come at a higher volume, I think, this year too. He only attempted 4.5 free throws a game last season. I think that could get up into, 5, maybe even close to 6, because Greg Monroe is not sucking up possessions on the block anymore. And some of those touches are going to be redistributed to Andre Drummond, and he's a guy that teams want to foul. We saw it more probably with it was highly publicized, at least with DeAndre Jordan last year. But if the ball is dumped down to Andre Drummond and he has a clean look, what is the defense going to do? They're not going to go up and try to block that shot. They're going to wrap him up and send him to the free throw line, and there's a pretty good chance he's going to miss both free throws. So I don't think he's a guy that people want to keep off the line by any means. So that there's really no. There's no limit to how many attempts he could see. It's just a matter of, strategically getting him the ball, I guess. And it's a tough spot for Detroit. You want to dump it down to him, but you don't want the guy to get fouled. And that's something you rarely say in basketball. But when you shoot it, that such kills you in real basketball, and obviously it kills you in certain leagues.
Yeah, look, if there's one thing you take away from any of these podcasts is you cannot deal with it. You cannot cover it up and just accept it. In a head-to-head league, you accept it. You can't do it. And do not pair him with Steph Curry. Do not pair him with James Harden. Do not pair him with Kevin Durant, because you're just wasting those players, one of their best categories. Don't do it. in a roto league, if you get a one in a category, forget about it. You got to basically come second in every other category to win your league. Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people will come out and say, you know, I did that and I punted free throws and I finished third, and that's great, but that's probably, you can't get any higher than that, because to finish first or second in every other category, it's almost impossible. You have to have the perfect draft in every other area, and it's almost impossible to do. So roto leagues, I'm not drafting him. I don't even put him on my rankings board for roto leagues. Forget about it. Same with Jordan, same with Howard. But for head-to-head leagues, he's elite rebounding, great blocks, good field goal percentage, which we hope goes back to being elite as well. And if you're in a league that's putting rebounds into offensive and defensive rebounds, well, he's a top 10 talent, basically, because we're talking about not even elite contributions. We're talking about the top contributions in any sort of category for him as an offensive rebounder. His positive Z score is 3.76, or it was last season, for offensive rebounding. And that's, I can't even explain how big that is. That is absolutely monstrous. And you lock down that category with him. He's rebounding, you pretty much lock that down. The blocks and field goal percentage, he's awesome at. And he's a second round talent in head to head leagues, and he's undraftable in roto leagues. You need to understand the difference if you are playing leagues, because, or different types of leagues, because it makes a big difference. Drafting him in a roto league, you might as well just hand your money to someone else and go, you know what, guys, I'm done after this draft because I've just lost the league now.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the offensive rebounds are something that you mentioned that are just huge with him. And, I mean, over 5 offensive rebounds a game, that's not even per 36. I mean, if you prorate that to per 36, you know, he's getting almost 6.5 offensive rebounds a
game. It's crazy.
Unheard of. It's absolutely ridiculous. I looked up the stat the other day, which I thought was crazy too. So since he came into the league in 2012-13, you know, 3 seasons under his belt, he has by far the most games with at least 7 offensive rebounds. 63 games over the last 3 seasons with at least 7 offensive rebounds. The next highest is DeAndre Jordan with 29.
Yeah, that's out of control. Now, I remember there was some stat in terms of his total offensive rebounds, and I'm just going to bring it up. Last season, he had 40 more offensive rebounds than the next guy, which was DeAndre Jordan, 437. DeAndre Jordan, 397. The next highest guy was 294. So he was 140 offensive rebounds. So it's like 25, over 25% higher than the third place guy in offensive rebounds, who was Tyson Chandler at 294. So he just, like, him and DeAndre Jordan just dominate that category, and Drummond's even better than Jordan by so far, that if you are, for some reason, splitting that your rebounds into offensive and defensive, which is a legitimate option, his value becomes significant, and it makes that punting free throws in order to get him on your team, because you're locking down 2 categories pretty comfortably with Andre Drummond in that point, in that sort of situation. Now, that transitions me pretty easily into who my favorite player on this team is, because it's him. He's your favorite player on this team as well?
Yes, yes. I mean, I think we talked about it on the Bucks podcast. I'm a big Brandon Jennings guy, as I think you are as well.
I am, yeah. I like Jennings a lot.
We do share that. Love Brandon Jennings. But yeah, it's Andre Drummond. I mean, they're a fun tandem when they were working together, when Jennings was healthy. I mean, he's a fun player to watch in pick and roll setting, you know, kind of a guy who's not afraid to throw a few flashy passes, and Drummond's obviously not afraid to finish him. But yeah, I mean, he's certainly the most fun player on this team. There's no question. Do you think he's just as good as DeAndre Jordan as an all-around player? I think DeAndre Jordan
I think he's better.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can make that case. I think they're very close, or I think Drummond might be a little bit better. And, you know, Jordan obviously playing with Paul and Griffin, playing in LA, gets so much more of the spotlight, but I think those two are relatively interchangeable. And then I think maybe on a national scale, a lot of people might not realize just how good Drummond is and how explosive he is.
No, I remember I watched his first ever preseason game, and I went, because I didn't know a huge amount about him. I hadn't watched him much in college, and there was talk that this guy's really raw, he's going to struggle. I watched his first preseason game, and he was jumping on people's heads. He was flying all over the place. And this guy's massive. He's tall, but he's wide. He's solid, and he was jumping all over people. You know, dunks, putbacks, alley oops. And I go, this guy is going to be something. The free throws are always going to be an issue, but his athleticism, his ability to crash the boards, and his aggressiveness, he stood out to me from day one. I was a massive fan of him right from the very start. What about your favorite all-time player, Nick? Who's the guy that you head to on this team and you go, this is my all-time Pistons guy?
The way I went about this, I don't know how to look at the all-time rosters. If you go to Basketball Reference, you can sort by jersey numbers. It basically just gives you a list of any player who's ever played for this team. And there are some names. I mean, the great Corliss Williamson came to mind. Reminded me of those great jerseys that I loved in the mid-90s. The
teal ones.
The burnt red and the teal with the weird silver horse thing on them. but I mean, this was kind of a two-way tie, I guess, between two of like my five all-time favorite players. Number one, my unquestioned favorite player of all time, Tracy McGrady. You know, obviously when you think of T-Mac, you think one of the best Pistons of all time and one of the greatest Hawks of all time, Knicks. Spurs. I mean, it got ugly there for a while at the end. But yeah, I mean, he had a decent run with the Pistons. Obviously, he was well past his prime at that point before he kind of started his retirement tour as he just tried to play for as many teams as possible. But yeah, I mean, he spent the 2010-11 season with Detroit, played in 72 games, 39 starts. Obviously not his finest, the finest year of his career, but yeah, as a T-Mac guy, he's definitely my pick there. But I also love Rasheed Wallace. Okay. You know, he's right up there with all-time favorite players. And obviously he's a guy who's probably his best years were with Portland, but he meant so much to them. You know, that 04 championship team doesn't do what it did without what Rasheed brought to them, both on the court from a leadership perspective. And then, yeah, I can't pick one or even two with some of these teams. Ben Wallace is another guy gotta love. I mean, just for his size, you know, a guy who's listed at what, 6'8", 6'9", was probably closer to 6'7".
Yeah, he was like a Barkley 6'9".
Right, exactly. And he obviously wasn't much of an offensive player, but with his limited skill set to become as successful as he was and be such an integral part of so many really good Pistons teams was really fun to watch.
Yeah, look, people, as always, tweeted me their suggestions of who they thought I was going to pick, and Sheed was mentioned quite a number of times. Bill Laimbeer was an option. I thought that was a nice one. Vinnie Johnson, Darvin Ham, Grant Hill, Chauncey Billups, Isaiah Thomas. No one picked who the guy was that I actually wanted to go, or Dennis Rodman was another one, but no one actually picked the guy that I wanted to go with, and I don't know why that, again, these players who I pick as my favorite players, they're guys who stuck with me in the early to mid-90s when I started watching this team, and the way I do it is I think of this team and go, who's the first player that gets into my head from this team? And it was Joe Dumars. I was big into Joe Dumars, not necessarily his career as a general manager, because that tended to go a little bit awry at the end. Started off well, didn't end that well, but as a player, I really liked what Joe Dumars could do. He just felt like he was an efficient guy out there playing the two next to Isaiah Thomas. They were a great backcourt pairing. He had a couple of really red hot seasons shooting from three. He hit 48% of his three pointers in 88-89. That's a huge amount. Not on many attempts.
Especially for back then too.
Yeah, exactly. Look, he only hit 0.2 threes a game, which is back then probably equivalent to about 1 or 1.2 threes a game. But he was a guy who could handle the ball as well. He had a couple of seasons of over 5 assists a game as a shooting guard, and playing next to Isaiah Thomas, that's pretty handy. Yeah, really good high field goal percentage player. As a shooting guard who is taking a decent amount of shots per game, he's averaging 48, 49, 47, 51, 48, 48, 45, 47. Like, these are high field goal percentage numbers. We talk about KCP hovering at 40 as a shooting guard. Well, Dumars is going 48, 49, 51. Like, these are a big numbers from him, and a really good free throw shooter. But I just like the way he went about it. I just thought he was really smooth out on the court. I like the way his shot looked. So Joe Dumars is my guy.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch many of those, you know, late 80s, early 90s Pistons teams, obviously.
You're clearly a lot younger than me.
Being a little bit younger. but I did. I mean, I've watched the Bad Boys documentary several times. I thought that was incredible. I actually wrote a piece on Adrian Dantley. He spent some time with the Bucks at the end of his career, so I wrote a little piece on him and, you know, got to do a lot of research. And he was a guy that, you know, a name you hear all the time, a Hall of Fame guy. But looking at his numbers, I mean, you probably remember him a little bit better than I do. This guy was shooting a career 54% shooter as basically a shooting guard, small forward type, you know, 6'5". And, you know, basically from all I read about him, like, the greatest, like, back down guard of all time. Somebody who didn't shoot threes and just, you know, averaged over 24 points a game for his career, basically just working in the mid range and getting to the hoop.
Such a weird game he had. He was just a guy that scored. You know, this is an odd comparison, but he sort of reminds me a bit of TJ Warren now, that the guy that can't necessarily shoot from deep, but just knows how to score. Like, you just get them the ball and he scores. And he had a run of 4 seasons in a row there in the early 80s of scoring 30 points a game on, as you said, crazy percentages, 58, 56, 57, 58, 56. Like, he was a top five fantasy guy for like 5 seasons in a row, just from his scoring, his efficiency. But then he's throwing in 4 or 5 assists, over 6 rebounds a game, a steal a game, and, you know, hitting a great free throw percentage. he had some really, really crazy seasons. His seasons weren't necessarily that crazy when he was in Detroit. He wasn't doing the 30 points on 58 shooting in Detroit. He was he was averaging about 20 points a game there, but still on 50% plus shooting. He had a really interesting play. There's not many guys that compare to Adrian Dantley, just his pure ability to score. He's a really sort of weird player in that sense that no one's really the same sort of guy as him.
He ended up getting dealt right before they won their first title, right? Like that mid-season, didn't they? I think they covered that in the Bad Boys documentary. Like, didn't he get dealt for like Mark Aguirre or something like that? And a pretty controversial deal, obviously, being with Stanley being an all-star.
In the 88-89 season, I think that's right. Yep. Headed across to,
Dallas. Very interesting career. It was my pleasure to research him. Like you said, not many, like there's just no comparison for, especially present day. Like, you can't be a shooting guard in this league and attempt 40 three-pointers for your entire career.
Is that what he is for his whole career?
47 for 41 in his career. And, they didn't have the three-point line only for his first two seasons. So, there really wasn't too much of an excuse for that.
Yeah, he hit 7 threes in his career.
Unbelievable.
Wow. That's really – and he averaged 30 points a game. That's pretty crazy.
That is.
I think we're done. Is there anyone we've missed?
We didn't talk about Cartier Martin
yes.
as much as I was hoping, or Eric Griffin, but we can save that for another time.
Cartier Martin, does he see any time at all?
Great name.
It is a fantastic name.
I love that name. Arguably the best first name in the NBA. That's saying a lot. But yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that just pops up on a roster every year. You see it. He's on Detroit this year. Okay.
I remember,
what's going to happen with him. Not much value there.
Last year, he, I think in the final preseason game, he scored like 35 points with 6 or 7 threes. And I went, what the hell's going on here? You look at like the top performers of the night and it's Cartier Martin. Like, that doesn't sound right.
Can't be right.
He does have a really good first. But I would say that Kentavious is probably, probably up there as one of the top names as well. So this team's
up there.
Blessed with the awesome first names. And the combination of Spencer and Dinwiddie is he's got a lot going for him as well. Mustache and he sounds like an old aristocrat.
Well, he looks like one too with that mustache.
He needs to wear.
I think you called it.
Go ahead.
You called it a top three mustache in the league, and I just don't even know if there's any competition at this point. I think it's pretty clearly number one.
Where's Brady Steven mustache Adams?
Into the season.
Steven Adams. Does he still have the mustache?
He does, I think, but his kind of goes in spurts. You gotta admire Dinwiddie's consistency, if nothing else. But yeah, Steven Adams, when he has it, it's something else. They're one and two, right? Is there even a third guy who consistently has a mustache?
No, I think that it's probably those two. I want Dinwiddie to go out there though, instead of wearing goggles. Like, I don't want him to have an eye injury, but I want him to wear like a monocle goggle with a mustache.
Oh,
just a one
that would be...
one goggle across one eye. Mustache.
Yeah.
The name Spencer. He needs to be like Spencer Dinwiddie the third, and just really, maybe come out to warm ups with the snap off pants and a top hat.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, play with the top hat if possible. I just googled. I have to clear my history after this. But I just googled NBA mustaches, and the first result is, you've probably seen this picture. The picture of Drew Gooden with his like goatee braided
on the back of his head.
The Bulls.
I don't want he's well, got there, that yeah, patch of hair on the back of his head.
Yeah, and in this photo, he has the patch of hair on the back of his head, some mutton chops, a mustache, and then a goatee that it's basically like Latrell Sprewell's cornrows, but in goatee form.
Yep.
Just gross.
If you want to Google NBA mustaches, the best mustache of all time is Larry Bird's blonde mustache.
Yes. There's a lot of Kurt Rambis on here, too. as you can imagine, there's a few Spencer Hawes. There actually is a Piston on here. I'm not sure who this is. Number 53 from, it looks like a late 80s. I don't know who that would possibly be. But yeah, just not a lot to love if you're Googling NBA mustaches, which I'm sure you all are.
I'm sure everybody join in the new trend, NBA mustaches. And let us know if you find any other ones that top Larry Bird's blonde one or any of these other ones that we're talking about here. Nick, it's been great having you on. A great way to segue out of talking actual basketball into talking facial hair. Let's remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter and your other vehicles for your beautiful work.
So you can find me on Twitter, again, just my last name, at Whalen. The L is a 1, W-H-A-1-E-N. Like Josh said at the top, going to do a lot of writing for RotoWire this year, a lot of their NBA content, and then a lot more probably long-form stuff at Bucksketball.com. That site is a member of ESPN's True Hoop Network. So, we not too much Bucks coverage this summer after the Monroe additions. There's kind of been a dead period. This is, you know, the last couple months have just kind of been the lull of the summer when it's just baseball here. But finally, we're picking up, and you know, training camp starts for Milwaukee, I know, next week, and I think just about every other team. So we're finally, about a month away from the start of the season.
Yeah, I think everyone's ready to go within the next 2 weeks. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah. We'll have some preseason basketball going. Don't forget to go and renew your NBA League Pass for everyone who hasn't done that yet. Even though the price has risen significantly, unfortunately, need to speak to the NBA about that. But everyone, go and get your League Pass and watch some games. Nick, thank you for coming on again. It's been good talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Josh.
No problem. Everybody, again, just a reminder, go and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. Thanks to the couple of people who have done that recently. I do really appreciate that. And if you've got a spare 5 minutes, just search it out. You can do it on your phone. Use the podcast app, search up the podcast, click review, type in 5 stars, hopefully. Just write one word. Good. Great. Whatever. Just write something. Just get the reviews going. I do appreciate it. Make sure you're checking out Hardwood Paroxysm as well. There's some pretty good stuff going up over on that website. I think there's an interesting piece that should get the internet talking, comparing Giannis Antetokounmpo and Nerlens Noel. So everybody's favorite boyfriends will be battling one-on-one in that article. So make sure you can check that out. I'm sure there'll be stacks of rational commentary about that on Twitter. So I look forward to hearing that as well. I'm not writing it, but feel free to read it and chime in.
Isn't it ridiculous that last summer around this time we were talking about Giannis as a point guard and now it's Giannis as a center? I am looking forward to reading that piece though.
Yeah, so am I. I can't wait to read it once it gets tweeted out, to watch the comments come in, because there's sure got to be some differing opinions or some irrational thoughts. But we'll wait and see. So make sure you're checking that out. Nick, again, thank you. We're done with this, the home stretch of these podcasts, so thank you for being a part of it.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.